So Willow gets close. He throws the bones at the foot of the baby. They form something kind of intricate. It kind of looks like somebody placed them there with a cut, right? Mm-hmm. And he leans down, he looks close, and the High Alwyn is like,
The bones tell me nothing.
And Willow's like,
it's very like, she doesn't die at this point, you know.
No apprentice this year, and another year with no apprentice. And he stomps off, and everybody's like, moom.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fine, because now we can go back home, because that's where the baby is.
But they can't go back home, because, like, after everything gets chosen, that's when the dogs attack.
Are they lion dogs?
They're lion dogs. Also, like, my note at this point is, I am here for dressing dogs as monsters and letting them run amok.
Amok, amok, amok,
amok, amok, amok, amok, amok.
They're called devil dogs in the script.
I don't like that. Dogs are not of the devil. Dogs are special and precious, and we love them.
Dogs have ADHD.
And they were Rottweilers, young ones. They were all trained to just like be happily chasing people. Oh. And they just stuck like rat tails on the end.
So you couldn't tell how happy they were. Yeah. We've talked about that, how dogs who are trained to be bad dogs are good dogs, and they can't help but wag their tails. He's like, I'm doing such a good job, except I'm under a giant mop dog thing with a rat tail glued to it with a weird face thing that's all like red-eyed and like,
yeah.
Crowd disperses.
Right. There's this really great moment where Willow's daughter is just crying and he's like,
she goes, Mama. And he's all like, he sends his son, who he's found in the dispersing and ravaged crowd. He sends his son with somebody.
He sends his son with his friend Migosh. We find out later that it's his friend Migosh because of their relationship together. It seems like it's his best friend.
Yeah, I would go with that. Also, a shorter
Nelwyn.
Nelwyn. I'll get there. I won't. I can't tell. I can't do names.
You'll get there.
I won't. But he looks around and he runs and he darts and he runs and he darts. And then he sees his daughter who... Okay, my sister doesn't have dwarfism, but like the long 80s bangs that she has reminds me so much of Maggie. Like, I think of this girl and I look at her and I'm like, oh my God, my sister. Like, she's just ravaged. When my sister cries and I feel empathy, which, you know, sometimes you have to work towards with siblings. Like, but like when I feel real bad for and about my sister, I think of this girl crying and being like, Mama, she holds her little straw doll.
I know.
And then he runs and he grabs her, and then she's immediately not crying, which is like a weird caveat to like the fact that she's crying for one scene, and we don't know why or how they prompted this tiny girl to scream.
But her crying is on point.
Hurts so bad to watch. And then he's dragging her away. And then we see the devil dogs tear apart a pram or something. It jumps over a fence. Mm-hmm. And then
like a minute later, the cops show up.
Like a single minute later,
yeah.
The cops jump over the fence and they all like prance around this dog. Prance is too fancy, but they parry, I guess, around this dog. And this, when did you call them devil dogs? Okay. So they parry around this devil dog and then they end up stabbing it. And like the head guy, the fiercest warrior, stabs him in like the throat. And then it like lays over and is like, bleh. And I'm like, R-O-U-S-S or D-D-O-U-S-S. I don't believe they exist.
Right. And so everybody's okay. Everybody's taken care of. The chaos has died down. And one of the guards kind of lifts up. It's like, it was looking for a baby. It's like lifting up this empty carriage. And then Willow's like, Kaya. Or no. One of his kids is like, Mama. And he's like, Kaya. And he goes rushing to the house.
Ditches
and,
both his kids.
And he's like, it's tense. It's tense as he's trying to go in there. And he's like, Kaya. And he's like, where are you?
He's fast, too.
Yeah.
He runs through town faster than I could.
And we see that, and as he gets through the house, we see this empty, open way.
Yeah.
And then his wife is just carrying the baby, and she's like walking over and like putting the baby into the bed.
I'm here, Willow. What's up?
Yeah. And he's like, you could tell he was pretty tense. And he goes over and he hugs her, and he's just like, we can't keep her. And so
we have to take her to the council.
Mm-hmm. And so him and his wife and the baby all go to the council.
And the two kids.
And the two kids.
Mm-hmm.
they all go into this barn that looks like a bunch of people are just kind of talking about, like, we have to find out who's responsible.
It was after a baby. We should find out who. Then he walks in with the baby. He hears that and he turns around and walks away.
And the High Aldwyn is just like, Willow, what do you have there?
And he's like, ugh. And he slowly turns back because he doesn't want to go. They were talking about dumping whoever brought the danger into the pit. Nobody wants to go to the pit.
Right.
No, at no point has anyone ever been like, you will be sent to the pit. And you were like, that's a good idea.
Burglecut was the one who offered that they punish whoever was responsible by throwing them into the pit. And that's when Willow turns around and is just like, nope, 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 nope.
So he's like, so the High Nelwyn.
High Aldwyn.
Dang it. I told you. That's the High Aldwyn was like, I will consult the bones. And everyone's like, bones? Yes, bones.
So they gather around him.
So Willow gets close. He throws the bones at the foot of the baby. They form something kind of intricate. It kind of looks like somebody placed them there with a cut, right? Mm-hmm. And he leans down and he looks close. And the High Aldwyn is like,
the bones tell me nothing.
And Willow's like,
it's very like, she doesn't die at this point, you know.
Right? And then he's like, "But okay, this is conspiratorial." And they're both down together. And he's like, the High Aldwyn is like, do you have any love for this child? And although he's been like, nobody fell in love with this baby, and everybody did. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, I have love for this baby. He's like, the bones have spoken!
Right. Right.
He's like, this man will take the baby.
Right. And the High Aldwyn's like, cool, go on this journey with Willow. And of course, his friend Migosh shows up and says, I will go. And Burglecut's like, yes, Migosh, that's a very good thing for you to do for your friend. And
super strong soldier who jumped right over the fence first to kill the devil dog. He's like, I'll go. And then
Burglecut is like, no, Vico. He's like, his name is like Vitko.
Terrible names. You can't be mad about it. Like, names are just the worst. Like,
unless I have them written down.
The second most adorable looking man. There's like the top three for me. And it goes Warwick, Val, and then this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, super attractive. Like, let's not even mince.
Von Carr.
Burglecut is like, no, Von Carr is the most powerful of the village. He needs to stay here and he needs to protect us.
And then he orders him to stand back.
Yeah.
And then High
Aldwyn.
Aldwyn. This was not going to stick ever. High Aldwyn's like, the bones tell me something. They tell me we need a leader. We need someone with a strong opinion who happens to be a fat guy with a receding hairline with long grayness and like an ability to be a landlord and like yell at people about seeds and shit. And like, maybe it's you.
So like one of the after the High Aldwyn.
I'm so glad he did it.
But here's the thing. So after the High Aldwyn goes ahead and consults the bones, and then he talks to Willow, and he's like, yes, Willow should go. Burglecut's like, yes, yes, praise the bones, praise the bones. And
praise the bones.
And so when he's all like, no, Von Carr shouldn't go, you need to step back. And he's being all like, you know, I got to be the leader here. That's when the High Aldwyn, the smartest in the village, because he's the guy who knows magic, he's like, the bones say it should be Burglecut. And then Burglecut is like, Von Carr.
It's very dramatic.
Yeah.
And then they called on Antonio Banderas to be the 13th of them.
And he was like, all right, I will go. But my accent does not match this role at all.
Omar Sharif was only in the movie for like 30 minutes.
He really was. It was cut for time. He was the shark boy.
Okay, so
I want Omar Sharif to be the shark boy.
Okay, that's like skipping ahead.
I don't even care. Pick your own thumb is where we're at.
I just wanted to say I love how meaningless magic can be. Like, you have the illusionary tricks of magic,
mm-hmm.
Like the, oh, where did this piggy go? But then you also have the fact that the High Aldwyn's like, the bones tell me nothing, which is like, okay, so it's
giving himself a second to figure some shit out is what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
It also is a calming factor for everybody else involved. Like, everybody,
it has nothing to do with us. It's what's decided by the bones.
Yes.
It kind of takes accountability off of people who probably, like, I mean, there's this whole thing in spirituality where you're like, oh, this is what God wants, when it may not actually be what God wants, but we're not going to get into that right now. But there's this level of accountability that, you know, you can obfuscate from yourself in an effort to go ahead and say, oh, This is what God wants, even though it's kind of like maybe what you want a little bit, but you're not necessarily taking responsibility, because if everything falls down, then you're not held accountable for your actions.
I felt like God led me to tell you you're a douchebag and that I don't need to lend you money. Except when I say it out loud, I mean that God asked me to be a steward of my financial interpersonal dependability.
But like, if like, I don't know, like as someone who believes in God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit and everything.
With you 100%.
There's a part of me that like, God doesn't really talk to me every single day the way that other people say that they talk with God. And like, I've heard like people who go on mission trips and they're like, God, I had to pray over every little thing I ate. I'm like, okay, I'm not on a mission trip, so I think this water is safe. Sorry, I'm being an asshole. But it's like,
No. There's scripture to back you up. Mm-hmm. Train a child in a way that he should grow up and he'll know which way to go. So if you've been given the proper guidance in your youth, then you should be able to make adult decisions, like I would say like 90, 95, 99% of the time. You should be able to say, this is good, this is bad, and make a decision. And sometimes you're handed a ton of bad decisions, which is what epics are about, like the movie Laid Before Us.
Right.
But like, sometimes you got to be like, let me throw these bones for a second and have an aside with you and be like, look, oh, I don't know. You don't know either. So we're just going to make a decision right now. Mm-hmm. But also, aside from you, that jerk has to go too. Because he needs to be put in his place.
Well, and like, I'm a firm believer in God gives us a brain because he wants us to think, and God gives us legs because he wants us to move. So if you know that you have to, like, you know, get up and find a job, because if you don't, your finances are going to be wrecked in like a month or two, then you need to find a job.
I've been known to speak to people I've been given authority over for no good reason, except for that maybe I didn't talk complete all the time. But like, when I was talking to youth kids, I was like, they're aren't mistakes with how God made you. So know that your imagination is supposed to take you further than the limits you've already set for yourself. You're allowed to go beyond the things right in front of you. And you should do that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, be guarded, use good judicial sense, but like, you're allowed to be bigger than what you have been set up to be.
Correct.
Because your parents want you to do well, and they want you to succeed, and they want you to follow these parameters. But then you have an imagination that says, what if I do this?
Right.
I love what if I did this. Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of this movie is about. And when we skip over a lot of the battle sequences and skip a lot and we like get through this right. in the next 45 minutes so that we go home before
it turns night,
like super night.
Yeah. But like, also, like, Willow is a father. He knows what he has to do in order to take care of this baby. So it's not even so much like, what if I went with them? It's also like, what do I know that I have to do? Because this task has been put in front of me. Mm-hmm. And it requires my immediate assistance. Because if I don't, the consequence is that this child is going to die. And like, there's one thing if it turns out that you're going to be homeless, but maybe like, let's say that you lose your home. Mm-hmm. That is horrible. Mm-hmm. But if you're the kind of person who didn't really want to maintain a home, and maybe you just kind of want to wander across the United States on foot, and that's something that you find a lot of joy in. I mean, like, so long as you're getting food, so long as you're taking care of yourself, then I'm like, yeah, all the more power to you.
Well, and I think you hit the nail on the head, especially with the consequence if you do nothing is this child dies and our community is in peril.
Right.
He's like, well, that includes my babies. Mm-hmm. And also, this child isn't innocent. So, of course, I'm going to step in the way of this child, like, getting harmed. So, like, the altruism in me is like, yes, Willow's choice makes beautiful, perfect sense. And that he has to drag a bunch of these unwillings with him, that's fine. I don't give a crap.
But they are kind of willing, because they're like, yeah, this is a child who doesn't deserve to be, you know, thrown to the wolves in a literal sense.
Well, except for Burgle Cut.
Yeah, but he's already been like,
he's our villain.
Yeah, he's the town asshole. Nobody likes Burgle Cut, even if he is the richest person. So they now, just sort of like, you know, feed his ego.
So now we're walking towards the journey.
Right. And this is them like making their walking out of the village. Also, like before Willow really leaves and says his goodbyes to his family, the High Alduin is like, hey, what finger were you wanting to originally pick?
Well, they're walking and he asks him, he's like, hey, I noticed that you were hesitant. What finger did you want to pick? And he was like, well,
it's stupid.
I wouldn't want to say, but like, I would have picked my own finger.
And the High Alduin was like, that was the right one.
Yeah, because that's the whole thing. Your power lies within yourself. Blah, blah, blah. Nerk, nerk, nerk. End of story. Roll credits. But like, but he hands it to you in a Ron Howard way, which is fine. Because it's like, oh yeah, maybe he needs to trust his gut because he's smarter than he thinks.
The logistic part of my brain was all like, he's probably giving Willow the answers because, like, it seems like the High Alduin goes ahead and chooses an apprentice, like, maybe every year, and he just hasn't found the right apprentice. So it's like he probably has heard that Willow wants to be a magician, be, you know, a sorcerer. And, like, maybe he's, like, talked with Willow because they kind of, like, have this back and forth and everything. But there's a part of me that's like, the High Alduin is like, yes, here's the answer to the test. We're going to give it to you next year and you're going to pass because you have the answer and everything.
It's entirely possible, but I feel like he comes back and just has the job.
Right.
But we don't know that. We don't see that. What happens
maybe
now?
Maybe the TV show will show that.
I would like to see that 100% very much, please. Okay. So his wife, Willow's wife, approaches and is like, take care. I love you so much. I have something for you. And he's like, huh? What? Hmm? And she like places into his hand an entire lock of her hair. I know that there's a part of me that is a hopeless romantic. And I'm sorry to those people who don't understand. But like, look, there's this stuff that grows out of your head that is stupid and dead. And it doesn't matter, except that you grew it yourself. And it is indicative of who you are as a human. You think of a person and you think of their face and then also their head. And then there's the hair that grows out of their head that was just like a dead little fingernail thing that kind of like is on their head, but it means a lot to you. And sometimes it smells good and it oftentimes feels good. And then like you associate that with like color and texture and scent to that person. And then they decide to cut it from their body and give it to you as a tribute and maybe a lucky keepsake, you know? And this movie embedded that into my brain because she gives him a big old chunk of hair, more hair than I've ever had on the entirety of my body. And she's like, here. And he's like, oh. And he like touches her face and then he like drags the bang out from under the handkerchief she's wearing over her head. And he's like, oh. And she's like, mm-hmm. And I was like, I love it so much. I love that. I mean, like, poor Jen, whomst I love more than life than itself. At least two times I've given you chunks of hair and you were like, why? And you can blame Ron Howard. Write a letter to PH P.O. Box.
Ron Howard in Los Angeles, California. Zip code unnecessary. My note was about how adorable the kids were with their dad. Like, oh, you're not going to be scared of fairies and of brownies and of trolls that will eat you whole. And I'm like, kids, stop giving them a good reason not to go.
What about dragons?
Right. And like at one point, like one's like, I'm going to go with you, dad, and I'm going to protect you from all the bad stuff that's going to happen. And I'm like, oh, these kids love him so much. It's so adorable. This is like the most cinnamon roll family of all time. And they just make me feel like watching this family makes me feel like I've wrapped myself into a comforter. Uh-huh. I have some hot chocolate and I have like a warmed pastry and I'm just staring outside as rain is falling. And it's
they
like
are cottagecore quintessential.
It's so lovely. I cannot tell you how much I absolutely am just like, like, yes.
Be with them in their tiny fireplace. And they're like,
if they would let me, I would camp outside. I would work their fields.
Move their chickens from one place to another. Plow their fields with their pig plow guy.
Look at a pig as a plow guy. Anyway.
So George Lucas writes a character who is a farm boy who leaves home and has a super epic time. Never been done before. Everybody loved it.
Yeah, Jen. Yeah, that's fair. But
you're not wrong.
Val Kilmer is Han Solo, and then look, Saoirse is Leia.
Shouldn't you say this like two scenes from now?
Look.
Yeah.
Willow.
We're already in part two.
In this movie, Luke is married and has adorable children.
And I'm super down, but then he doesn't end up kissing his sister, so...
Yeah, I'm also down with that. So...
So the head Alcuin guy...
Hi, Alduin.
Don't matter.
Head Alcuin. I love that. Anyways. So, head Alcuin.
Throws a rock into the air. It turns into a bird. He goes, follow that bird. It flies the wrong direction.
Burglecut is like, it's going back to the village.
Never mind. Just follow. Except like Stanley. So like, never mind. Follow the river.
I was like, ignore the bird.
So they did. Okay. So.
Yeah. And like, oh no, this is later on. Cause like at one point Burglecut gets like
bird poo on him. No, he doesn't get bird poo on him. What happens the baby starts crying.
Oh, yeah.
The baby starts crying. And Willow's like, the baby's sick. We have to stop. And Burglecut's like, nah, we didn't keep going. Baby's sick. And so he like picks up the baby and is like, you're okay, aren't you? And the baby unleashes like, 2.5 cups, maybe like 4 cups of like super it looks like strained clam chowder.
Listen,
which is what I want it to be, as it splatters across his face. And Willow scoops up the baby from Burglecut, and Burglecut's like,
he gets one of the guards to like wipe it off of his face.
And like, and then Willow's holding the baby. He's like, good baby, thank you for.
Just like, yeah, I feel so much better now because I puked up.
I was like crying. Okay, my initial note was crying does not equal sick, because I've worked with a lot of kids and sometimes they puke. Yeah, it's fine. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're sick, but if you can have a beautiful, picturesque moment of puke, it's kind of exquisite.
Right. And so as like they take this long trek, and you can tell that it's over the course of a few days. So you have like the day where they need to stop and Burglecut gets puked on by the baby. But then you have another day where they're changing out the diapers, and
we cut to the queen. Don't forget the evil queen cut.
Oh, yeah.
So we get to the evil queen, and she's berating her daughter for being not able to find this baby. And then also Skull Guy comes in, and she's just like, this guy knows what's happening. This guy should like find the baby. And he like flips up his mask, his super cool skull mask with like horns and stuff. And he's like, the baby of prophecy? And she's like, the baby of prophecy? And he's like, you should find the baby of prophecy. It's going to destroy you. And she's like, I know. And then like have a glance that I'm like,
like, at one point, she slaps him, and he doesn't really bat an eye at it too much, but they have a moment where they just sort of lock eyes.
They into it.
Yeah.
You know why?
Because his name is Spinach.
Is his name Spinach?
It's Kale.
Same difference.
I just kept wanting to be like...
Kale, no.
Kale!
Oh, you were going to...
Kale!
I know that song. This is AWOL Nation.
Do you want to know why his name was Kale?
Yeah. You
came from
why?
A family of lettuce farmers.
George Lucas, believe it or not, has haters. And one of those haters is a person that writes columns and editorials about movies when you could still make money doing that.
Is this a Sean fact?
And...
pew, pew, pew.
One of those film critics was Pauline Kael. George Lucas has, in this movie, more than once? Named characters after film critics that trashed his films.
Did he have a critic by the name of Bav Morda?
No.
Oh,
I will let you know further into our review and walkthrough. Who the additional character is that...
You know Bav Morda and Kale?
Yeah.
They...
Yeah.
Every night she's like, Kale!
She slaps him.
He's like into it.
Yeah. So she pretty much says, you have to help my daughter because she can't find a simple child. And they go off together. Sorsha, her daughter, and Kale go off together to find this child. And then one of the seers goes ahead and says, I foresee that your daughter will betray you. And she's
I trust her more than I trust you. Except that doesn't work.
No. Nope.
So... Okay, so now we're so what happens is now they're like, stop. Our troop is stopped, and they're changing her diaper, and they're like, whatever.
Right. And they have to hide from like the devil dogs.
Horses, right? And then what happens is exhibition horse stage edition. Because guy's like, we need to find the baby of the prophecy before. Like, we have to get her back to Queen Megadephordia. And, like, we have to get her back right away. And they're like, oh, yes, it's not just a random baby we need to drop off. It's not just a random baby we need to drop off. She's part of a prophecy to a queen. We need to, there's like so much we need to unpack here.
But they also mention the Nelwyn village and that the baby is with a bunch of other Nelwyns.
Yeah, like they're like, we went to the Nelwyn village. A group has left. Like, who were they talking to? Like, who?
Right, because if Burglecut was left at the village, you would have known it would have been Burglecut.
But it wasn't him, so it had to have been a henchman who was like, yes, a number of guys left just a few days ago. I'm not going to mention if they had a baby with them or not, but maybe they did.
Yeah, and this is what prompts them to not take the road. They just kind of go trimpsing through the forest.
So number three handsome guy is like, yeah, no, we're gonna stick to the trees, don't worry. The next cut is them walking down a leafy hillside. Not a like a tree at the bottom of the screen. A tree maybe at the top of the screen, but there's nothing protecting them visually from anything right there. And that doesn't freaking matter, except that it gives you better vibes than the Fellowship of the Rings vibes that 13th Warrior was trying to give us, I would say.
Like, as far as the travel goes?
Yeah, I mean, they were like this band of brothers, and they don't necessarily like each other, but they are, like, together. They eat like a rabbit, they're like, jovial. And, like, this one fat guy who's a jerk, but, like, the rest of us are fine, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we end up at the crossroads. And then you can sing the song if you want to, Jen. I don't know how tone deaf it is right now.
I'll see you at the crossroads. So you won't be lonely.
Which actually kind of makes sense because the song Crossroads by Bone Thugs and Harmony is actually about like when people pass on to when they die.
And there are dead guys there. Yeah. So that's a whole thing.
Yeah. I'm going to miss everybody. I'm going to miss everybody.
I love that song.
It's a good one.
I think it's a good alone in the car song. I don't think it's a good funeral song anymore. I think we've played it out a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in 15 years?
Played at Val Kilmer's funeral.
In like 50, is he dead yet?
No.
R.I.P. Val Kilmer.
Oh no. Just Val Kilmer got coronavirus in 2020.
Val Kilmer died after severe burns off of a no-name podcast.
Oh no. He's not going to get any burns off of this one, but if we do any other Val Kilmer one, he's in trouble because this is his hottest broadcast.
We'll do the doctor. We'll do the island of Dr. Moreau. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh. We could do that. At some point, we could do that.
I don't know who gets to pick next.
Yeah. I don't.
Okay. So wait. Okay. So we see the troop advancing on these hanging cages with lots and lots and lots and lots of skeletons in.
Before that, they make a camp near the crossroads because they know that this is going to be a heavily populated area, and if someone's going to show up, it's going to be that. And that was one of the High Alduin's directives.
Go to the crossroads.
And give the baby to the first Nelwyn or the first Daikini that you see. And so they make camp, but they hear all of these spooky noises, and then Willow is like backing up without looking where he goes, and then a jump scare hand grabs him and it like pulls him up.
Give me some water, Peck.
Yeah. And this is Val Kilmer. He is like making threats of death and then he lets him go.
Like, give me some water. And Willow is like, yeah, no, totally. And then like he backs away, not getting the water. And I look at then like it cuts to Val Kilmer with like his grody looking teeth and his like grody looking cageness. And I'm like, Val Kilmer, gross, but like,
yeah.
He gets better looking throughout the rest of the film, you have to admit.
He like, eventually gets a bath.
Yeah, I suppose so. So then Burglecut is just like, he's fine, let's just leave him with him. And Willow's like, no, they put him in there for a reason. We should not leave the baby with the incarcerated guy. Okay, and there's a lot to unpack there, but let's just go with it's a white incarcerated guy and we assume he's in there for a good reason.
Mm-hmm. Because he's just like this single guy just hanging out in a cage. And it's like, okay, there's no indication. He obviously hasn't had water or something to drink. So he's probably been there a few days, though. Like, if you don't, like, what is it, like 9 days before your body starts like breaking down from dehydration?
It is... it is the 333 rule.
Mm-hmm.
It is 3 minutes without oxygen, 3 days without water, and 3 weeks without food, and then you die.
So he's probably been in there, like, on the... So 3 days without water?
At least. I would assume. I'm sure that the numbers just get fudged a little bit, depending on how well hydrated you were, or mm-hmm. what kind of physical expenditure you're giving. But in general, the safety classes I've taken are 333.
So he's pretty much, even if he's, like, been in there with, like, maybe they gave him, like, a water skin that said, this is going to last you, like, a month.
No, it was a death sentence. Yeah. I 100% think they just stuck him in there. So it's probably been 3 days, mm-hmm. if not a little longer. But also, like, I suppose you could fudge it even more depending on which fantastical idea you're going on. It really doesn't matter because, one, they don't say, mm-hmm. right? So we can't even foster a guess, right? But then Burgle Cut starts being like, first guy we see, let's leave him with the guy. We should just totally go now. And
Willow's like, no, I'm a dad. This is a baby. You don't do that. Stuff it. You're not in charge when it comes to this baby.
So everyone decides to go except for...
Migosh and Willow.
Migosh and Willow decide to stay with a baby mm-hmm. at the crossroads waiting for some sort of Dakini.
Right. And then it feels like the next morning show comes around and they get a couple of like fast riders come through.
But like... Okay, so dude wakes up and he's like, hey, my name is Mad
Mardigan.
Mad Mardigan. I feel like I didn't introduce myself to you yesterday. Migosh is like, pleased to meet you, and goes to shake his hand.
And Willow's like, no.
It's super cute. And then, okay, with the fast riders who come by and do not stop, it's like scouts from people who are about, it's scouts who are about... to come from some people behind them, right? We get one who rides by super quick who wakes them up, and then the dialogue happens. And then a second one comes up. Willow tries to stop them and then ends up diving out of the way in the last second. And then Matt is like, hey, give me some water. And Willow's like having a drink of water. And he's like, okay. And he starts to walk over there and he's like, what's that noise holding back the water?
Right.
And then Matt's like, that's like the X many carriages. And X many, well, like 1,000 dumbasses, mm-hmm. right? And Willow's like, oh, great, some Dakini to like give mm-hmm. our baby to.
Right.
And he like goes to give him the water, but then the approach happens and like the water topples out of Mad Dog's hands.
Yeah.
And he like licks his fingers and it's like, oh, poor guy, right?
Yeah. And so Willow, completely ignoring Mad Mardigan, goes over and picks up this baby and starts.
Okay, so Migosh lets Mad Mardigan go after the one troop stops. Eric stops and is just like, hey, you're that douchebag I knew. And he's like, you're the douchebag I knew. You probably deserve to be in here. Rot in your coffin, and then rides off to war.
Right, and this was after Willow's like, excuse me, sir, we have one of your babies. Can you take him? And that's when Eric goes ahead and takes off his helmet. He's like, that's woman's work. And that's when Mad Mardigan says, I thought you were a woman, Eric.
Eric?
Anyways.
It doesn't matter. So Migosh lets him out. He does a weird flip thing. He does this thing that I don't like where it like... I don't know how taboo it is within little people culture, but I cannot imagine that a fuller sized person picking up a smaller person is acceptable in any way.
Yeah, because they let Mad Mardigan out because this like a group of troops just kind of like is gone and they don't really have any other options and they need to get back home. So they let Mad Mardigan out and he's just like, I feel better. And then he lifts.
He does a roll. He lifts up Migosh. He's just like, whoa. And Migosh is like, great for you, bro. Send me down. And I'm like, consent is key. Do not touch my body.
Yeah.
Don't touch it.
And then he goes ahead and takes the baby and he's just like, woo. And like being like, you know how some people when they grab a kid, they just start like a baby specifically, they will start like throwing the baby up in the air.
He does a weird, intense twirl.
Yeah.
And you see Willow being like, thank you very much. And he's
and
like,
the baby also has a few thoughts on her face.
Yeah. What happens is, what's his face? Mad Dog says, she likes me. And they cut to her face and she goes,
yeah. like if her expression were going to be vocalized, it would be more like a
She goes heh heh. She okay. Like I wrote it down. Okay. She was like heh, heh.
Yeah.
I was like, honey, I'm so sorry. And then okay, so what happens now is that dude's like, hey, I'm going to take care of her. I love her so much. She's such a good girl. You guys go home. I'm like super cool. Mad Dog walks away with the baby with the milk skin. And I'm not going to steal milk from a baby, blah, blah, blah. And then Willow and Migosh walk away. And they're like, we're going to get medals. And it's going to be amazing. And then all of a sudden, Willow's like, Do you think we made the right decision? And Migosh is like, medals, it's going to be amazing, right? And so then all of a sudden you hear, ha, 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 ha.
You hear this outrageous French accent. And he's like, ha, 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 ha. And you hear the baby crying. And there's like a hawk that's carrying the baby. And you like, and you can see like the camera like shoots over to like the back of the hawk, and there's like some small little guys on it. And we find out later that these are brownies.
Yes.
And so they go ahead and like the baby gets, you know, has been kidnapped from the big oaf.
Yeah, like the basket swings low over their head. They have to duck. And then they're like, the baby. And then they start running after this hawk, trying to catch up these brownie hawk riding baby carrying thieves. And brownies. Okay, so they end up in a clearing ish it's the woods, it's like deep woods, and they get little putioned.
Both Migosh and Willow end up getting pretty much tied down. They like have all these tiny little spears getting thrown at them, and they're like the equivalent of constantly getting belt with a bunch of needles. So it's super uncomfortable.
Yeah,
and then they
but not deadly.
Right. And then they get like tied down to the ground, and then like there's a time lapse. Like they probably get knocked out, and then they get tied down to the ground. When they wake up, they're like, oh, I can't get out. And that's when you hear like this ethereal voice saying, let them go. You need to let them go. And then this lady, kind of like this ethereal lady, comes up, and she's just like, Willow, you need to take Alora Danum to Tirislean, where a kind king and queen will raise her. And he's like, how do you know my name? And she's like, Alora told me. And it's like, that's the baby.
She's just a baby.
Yeah, she can talk to me. I'm like a magic lady.
Naturally.
Right.
So here's where the science breaks down for me.
In a fantasy movie.
I cannot be told a complex mission once without writing it down, and then I'm supposed to know it. It's just like, go to the island, give my wand to this lady, take this lady to this land, take this land with the lady and make it a war thing, and then like she's super cool, and then you can go home and everything is fine. I'm like, no.
Right.
Go back. I hadn't pulled my pen out yet.
Right. Be like, I need that written down a few times, or we're going to have to like recite it several times so that way I remember it.
Straight up told people on the phone at work. I'm like, hey, you talk faster than I can write. Mm-hmm. So if you could give it to me real slow, that'd be real nice.
I get told that a lot as I'm like walking through someone about like, this is how you download a file to your computer. And they're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. That was real fast. And then I'm like, oh, that's right. I do this every day.
Like, okay, open. Like, okay. Okay. At the bottom left, there's a little thing that looks like a window.
Yeah.
Click on that.
See the file name blank? Yeah, you gotta left click on that once. Oh, okay. Yeah, you gotta click on open file. Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's like a couple of windows that'll pop up, and then I'll be able to connect to your computer.
Okay, can you right click?
Left click once. It's like click once. Yeah, that's left click. Because left click is like the default click.
I got made fun of by a millennial for using my left click twice. And I came home and I was like, am I clicking buttons wrong? And Jen's like, if you're trying to get on the internet, you need to click twice. But everything else, you need to click once. And I was like,
Yeah. It's like, if it doesn't happen like once, then you have to do it twice. Computers are more complicated than they need to be. And it's because they're created by developers.
Oh.
Sorry, Jen. Sorry.
That's okay. She doesn't have to sleep with you tonight.
Yeah, you just have to be like, yes, Lydia was a just saying that.
I want to be like, just it was ignorance. We let ignorance slide. Ignorance is not malice.
Sure, okay, never mind. So back to Willow.
It's fine. I've asked way dumber stuff of this poor woman. I've been like, today I was like, which controller? There's only two. I could have figured that out.
But there doesn't need to be more than one if it's actually user-friendly. It's not. It's because of the fact that you have all these different... I'm sorry. I'm going to just like, you know, Like, I get it, the production side of it. You have all these different devices and they're not all controlled by the same group. And like, yeah, I get it. Never mind.
So anyway, fairies.
Lydia, you're fine. This poor woman and me, we've been through it.
Oh, so Willow was taking the easy way out and then he got called out for it.
Well, here's the kids called out fairies, brownies, dragons and trolls. Except we've got brownies and then fairies in this business. And I think that is interesting because they're out of order, but we get everything the kids called out. And I think that's really good storytelling, I would say, because it's a number of fantasy things that they may not have encountered before, but we get a this could happen to you scenario.
Do you remember the beginning of Finding Nemo when Nemo was asking his dad a whole bunch of questions like how long does a sea turtle live? And then later on, he encounters the sea turtles.
What about Lilo and Stitch when she's giving the fish a peanut butter jelly sandwich and she's like, it's because he controls the weather. And then she misses it because she's stuck up with this weird alien and then the weather gets screwed up.
So it's just good plot devising.
I like it. Alora is the name of the baby. No writing down the mission.
And the ethereal lady is by the name of Shalandriel and she's like, take my wand to Finrizel. And she will accompany you to Tirith Leen, where a good king and queen will raise Alora Dannon.
Do you know? Then she fades away and she goes like,
Willow's like,
and another thing. And she pops back up real hard.
Right. Willow's like, I can't do this. I can't do this. I'm like, no, I'm like short for a Nelwyn. You got the wrong guy. And she's just sort of like fades away. And then she's like, instead of a lord, you will have a queen, not dark, but beautiful and terrible as the dawn.
Oh, Galadriel. Who yeah. I would have followed into battle.
Also, my note was like, ah, giant woman.
But all I want to do is see you turn into
a giant woman.
A giant woman.
So
in your Steven Universe.
Anytime, every day, all the time.
But then she does leave and she's like, it's your choice.
Yeah.
Wait, take my wand for Grizel. Goodbye.
Yeah.
So now Willow's being led by the brownies mm-hmm. through the wilderness, and these two brownies, I love them so much. There's Lion Hair Brownie and there's Mouse Hat Brownie, and their names are Frenchie and
Frangie
and Rule.
Yeah. For the longest time, I thought that that Frangie was actually Frenchie, which made sense to me because they had these like very like
we are
stereotypical...
these guys who are talking to you.
Yeah.
What are we doing? We don't know.
But they're crazy French accents.
Yeah. And they're so funny. They're like, you follow us. We go this way. No, we go this way. I meant we go this way. You follow my direction. They go yeah. in one direction. And they're like. They're like, don't worry, Willow, you follow us and no harm will come to you.
Yeah.
And then it's like.
Yeah. They're stuck in a rainstorm and they come across this town.
Gross tavern is what I call it. It's gross.
Yeah. So he's like, I can't take her in there because it's gross. And they're like, no, you totally got to do that.
No. He says, we have to go in. We're drenched and she needs milk. And they're like, we don't want to go in there.
It's gross.
Yeah, whatever. It doesn't really matter. They're going in the tavern because he's trying to find milk
mm-hmm.
and dry off for a little bit, which makes perfect sense. And so he goes inside. He gets cabbage shown to him. He's got called a peck again, which is like a racial slur, apparently.
Yeah, like you can, like, almost every instance where Willow is encountering a Daikini, the Daikini is calling him a peck.
Yeah. We just, I guess, assume that it means small measurement. But he gets inside. He can't find anybody to be compliant to his demands. And so he ends up under the stairwell where he lays the baby down.
Mm-hmm. And as he's like fiddling with Alora, the brownies are like, one of them sees a lady and he's like, oh, give me the powder of a broken heart. And the other guy's like, no, I'm not going to do that for you. And so there's a struggle. And then like the
mouse guy gets hit in the face.
Yeah.
With some, and he falls down off of the perch they're on. And he comes up and the other guy's like, oh, well, broken heart, whatever the heck that belongs to the fairies. And then he's like, oh. You're beautiful. And you don't see what he's looking at. And he's like, I want to kiss you in the face. And you hear, and he's like, come to me, you beautiful creature. I love you so much. And like he approaches this beautiful tabby who's like...
The cat's reaction to unwanted affection is appropriate.
Yes, 100%. And he like goes to kiss the cat's face and she's like, oh, no. She takes a thwap at him and he jumps like 2 feet in the air backwards onto a ledge where he stumbles into a pot that which then knocks him into a bucket and then he he falls in with a splash and he pulls up and he's like, I'm okay. And then he's like, this is beer. And he's got like a foam nodule on his nose and he's like, ha! And he like back bombs into it. And dude looks down at his patch. He's like, dumbass with my heartbreak fairy powder.
Yeah. And Willow's fiddling with Allura and then he, you know, like leans back up against a wall and I think he has like Allura in his arms, but when he leans against the wall, the wall gives way and he falls into the room behind him.
Yes.
And that's when he sees this lady who's talking about like, my husband's going to be here pretty soon and you need to get ready. And then the other person in the room turns around and it's a Mad Mardigan in drag.
Yes. Yes. Well, halfway in drag. He doesn't have anything over his hair yet. Okay. So here's my problem with
Mad Mardigan.
I have few problems with Mad Mardigan. Let's be fair. But what's the guy's name? Lug?
Lug. Yeah. This lady's husband is named Lug and he eventually comes in.
So Lug comes in and he's like, she's like, oh, this is my cousin. Ha 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 ha. And he's like, your cousin, you say? And he comes over and he gets all like, gross with her, presumably her, except we know that's Mad Dog. Mm-hmm. And he like grabs at her and he's like,
oh yeah, he grabs at her boob and then she like throws that away and then he's like, you wanna breed?
Grossest thing I've heard in a film in a very long time.
At this point she is holding a baby because she like grabs the baby from Willow.
Wet nurses.
Pex makes such terrible, you know, wet nurses or something, or yeah, like something babysitters. Like
yeah,
something
yeah.
like that.
Nannies or whatever, it doesn't really matter.
But like he grabbed at Mad Mardigan and that's when it's like, okay, I need something that is going to stop him from grabbing my
then the door, well, he grabs the baby and then the door opens and a bunch of guards come in and they're like, oh, get everybody with children, and they all file out into this main hall, which I think
one of my favorite lines in the movie happens in that room with the brownies.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so drunk Brownie, who stumbles out of the beer stein or whatever that he fell into, he comes in and he's just like, hey!
I remember you, Tykini. I stole the baby from you when you was taking a pee-pee.
Is that this scene? I, for 100%, thought that you were going to say that your favorite line was, hey, are we going to party?
I guess that's pretty good. It's still not as good as... I mean, there are two things that I pull away from this every time that are like my favorite quotes. Uh-huh. That was the first one. Second one is just, I mean, because everybody that I know of.
The bones tell me nothing.
No.
That's my number one go-to.
Okay. I haven't heard you say that before.
I say it in my head.
Okay. But just, Willow.
Okay. Yeah. We say that all the time.
Yeah.
When we were like, hey, what movie should we do? We weren't like, hey, let's watch Willow.
No, we were like, let's do Willow.
So they get shuffled out of the room and there's like a bunch of, you see like the skull guy and then you see the princess, warrior princess.
She's a helmet on, so we don't know that she's a lady.
We kind of know.
We know. Yeah. We know because we watched her walk out of her mother's chambers with the helmet on.
Yeah.
But Mad Dog with his like feminine dress up doesn't know.
Right. And he's covering up his mouth.
She's like, let me see that baby. And he's like, no. And then Willow's like, don't look at that baby. Not that baby specifically. Right.
Also, like he when she goes for the baby, Mad Mardigan pushes her away. And she's like,
she pushes Willow away, though.
Oh, okay.
Willow gets thrown to the ground and he's like, don't show her the baby. And Mad Dog's like, oh, I shouldn't show her the baby. Mm-hmm. And so then when she's like, show me the baby, he like elbows her like far away. And then she's like, you're very strong. And she whips off her helmet and he's like, you're very beautiful.
And I'm like, okay, Mad Mardigan, you're showing your ass here.
Right. Okay. But then she goes, you're not a man, and like whips off his head covering. Mm-hmm. Right. And then my notes go, toxic masculinity saves the day.
Yeah, he's like, gentlemen, meet Lug. Because Lug is like, not a woman, not a woman. And he just goes into this rage.
He like tackles a guy and like tackles another guy. And now they're free to escape to the balcony where they jump off. And then Baby and Mad Dog jump into a carriage, and then like they start running away, and then Willow's like, oh no, me too, and then flings himself into the carriage, not knowing where the baby was placed.
Mm-hmm.
And that hurts my feelings because he could have
squished the baby.
He could have squished the baby. Maybe that's too much math.
Well, maybe he went ahead and just kind of took a cursory glance into the back of the wagon and saw that the baby wasn't there, and he knew, okay, Mad Mardigan, you know, had her, so maybe Mad Mardigan put her somewhere.
He landed on a pile of cloths. I will go back just a second and say that Lug was mad that his wife was cheating on him, but was like super into molesting a random lady he found in his room.
Yeah. Not just a random lady.
A cousin.
The cousin of the probably spouse.
Is bet.
He was willing.
Yeah.
He was willing to breed with her. So, and then he was like, "Nope, you're like, oh my goodness, like what? What okay. was it? Was this the part in the movie where we were like, you're not a cishet woman?"
That is exactly where we started being like that. Okay, so like now we're back in the... Okay, guys, jump back with us. Okay, so there's a cart with two horses on it, right? Which is where our main guys are. It's faster than multiple one horse, one person rider people.
Right. There are two horses attached to the carriage, but like they got some drag on it.
Yeah.
And then you got the like single horses. So like I would assume everything kind of evens out.
It does not. That's not good mouth. Nope. Not good mouth. Not good meth. Not good math. No mouth, meth, or math was used to make that work. It doesn't work. It doesn't work math wise. A single mount is going to be faster than a carriage. I don't care who you are.
Okay.
But also, we have the second puke of the movie when Mouse Hat Brownies is like, and like retches out the side of the carriage.
Right. And there's this big old chase scene. You got the baddies who are like on side of the carriage trying to take Mad Mardigan out. And they like at one point he gets a hold of a mace and then that makes him more effective. But then he gets like pushed to the very like he's like fighting with one of the baddies in the back of the carriage. And Willow has to like try and grab the reins at the front. And like they get like all of the people off at or I think they get like a wheel broken and all the people off. And then Willow like halts and is like, you do not drive that fast with a baby. And Mad Mardigan's like, bruh, we got to get going. And so he like goes and they like they speed up again. And
yeah. And eventually a second wheel breaks. This is a big action scene. So mm-hmm. we see people getting thwacked off. All of a sudden, Mad Mardigan has like a mace that had been wrapped around his. I don't know about you, but if I had a mace wrapped around my neck, I probably wouldn't be functioning very well. But he unwraps the mace, swings it, hits the guy. That's a whole thing.
There's a Wilhelm scream in this scene somewhere.
I love a Wilhelm scream. It's going to be my text tone eventually.
Right. And so they eventually get enough, like they get all of the pursuing guards. They get them knocked off and like they're not.
Well, see, Willow stops the carriage and is like, never drive that fast.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other guys who had passed him because they had stopped turn around and he's like, screw you. But Mad Dog is like, screw you. Mad Dog is a beer, isn't it?
It's Mad Mardigan.
Madagascar.
Maddie.
What is Mad Dog? Is it a beer?
I mean, Mad Dog has been like a nickname for a lot of different characters in a lot of different films. Generally, it's like for a character who's like, you know, a little bit tougher than the regular guy.
Oh, but he's not because he wears a lot of pink. So,
look, guys who wear pink can be tough.
I'm super down. What if I call? Okay, so sometimes I call Madeline Mad or Mood. I don't wonder if she'll get mad if I call him Mad. I'm going to say Mad.
You could just call him Martin.
Why?
Because it's Mad Mardigan.
Marty.
You could just call him Mad Marty.
I'm calling
Marty.
Him Mad. No, I'm okay. Too lazy for that. So Mad stops the carriage and he's like,
Mad Mickelson.
Mad Cardigan.
Mad Sexy Man. Let's be fair. He's like, what are you doing? These other bad guys are turning around towards them and he's like, Will is like, you never drive with a baby. Like, he's like, whatever. And he like goes really fast and he like runs through them. Not exactly sure the entire exchange. Maybe this is where the brownies cut the beer well off of it and it hits the last guy.
Yeah.
By the way, that's a great effect. Like that. I mean, the rope
yeah.
what and the beer keg are one scene, and then they've got the superimposed brownies cutting this.
Yeah, there's a
rope
little
that isn't
there's
there.
A little tint difference between the rope they cut and the rope that snaps onto the guy, but it's still very, very good.
Mm-hmm. Like the effects when it comes to the brownies is like you can tell it's a green screen, but for 1988, like that's some real good effects.
Look, it's better than most of the Saw movies that I've ever seen, and they were all produced well after 2001. Right?
I've never seen a Saw movie.
Oh, Lydia, my Lydia, my untattooed Lydia. It's not good. But it's so good. It's good that it's not good. I saw Saw 6 in the theater and there was a boom mic in a shot. And I was like, you know what? If I noticed at the $2 theater on a Thursday night, maybe somebody higher up the chain should have noticed. bad. Okay, so they ditch the guys. Eventually, after taking off for a second time, Mad stops the carriage with that only has two wheels now.
Yeah.
And he's all like, now we get off.
Right.
Right.
And so everybody gets off and he hits the horses. So the carriage goes forward and he's like, get off the road.
Yeah. And that allows the pursuers to pursue. Sorry, the carriage, assuming that they're still on it.
Right.
Which I think is good math.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So they travel together for a little while. My notes say, charming baby is charming.
Mm-hmm. And at some point, like, you kind of get the feeling like Willow's like, hey, Mad Mardigan, we could really use your help because you're super powerful. And he's like, no, I don't want to travel with you. And
he then he fashions his pink pants out of the shreds of his clothes. And he's got these shreddy pink pantaloon pants and he's like not wearing a top and his hair's all long and now like not bunned up, so it's like a long and dark and flowing, and I'm like
yeah,
and, oh no, bestow my 1990s heart.
And the brownies are like, okay, we're going in that direction. No, it's that direction. Are you sure? I mean because when you're drunk I'm the one who's like in charge.
Yes.
He's just like, it's that direction. It's like,
and then he points in the same direction as the drunk guy and he's like, that way. And they're both like, that way.
And
except, okay, so then Val, Mad Dog, is like,
it's like, okay, oh no. That was the direction I was going.
Oh, that was the, fine, that's the way I'm going. I guess you can go with me that way. But you're not going south, are you?
And Willow's like, no, we're not going south.
Just as far as the lake is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay. Yeah.
And so we see them traveling for a little bit, and
they
like
bed
the next
down, they bed down at night.
Oh yeah.
And then dude so
what, Willow is like trying to play with the one that he was given.
Yeah, but also at some point Mad is like, you know, the baby's cute except for when she's smiling. Oh no, especially when she's being quiet. And Willow's like, she's a princess, and he's like, oh yeah, and you're a great wizard. And I am the Prince of Kashmir. And Willow's like, well, I guess that's all I can prove. I guess I don't really have anything. So like Mad Dog rolls over to go to sleep. And then Willow starts playing with the sword. Magic words come to him somehow. We don't know how. He poofs himself up into a tree. And he's like, Mad Dog. And Mad Dog looks up and he's like, oh, you're up in a tree now. And he's like, I'm up in a tree now. And then Mad Dog rolls over again and just leaves Willow in a tree. Dot, dot, dot. There's nothing. We don't know how he gets down.
We are now half of the way through our review of 1988's Willow, a Plotter, but we still have a lot of ground to cover. Hey, this is your audio engineer and bite-sized baby-stealing brownie, Jen. This is just a small, teeny-tiny thank you for continuing to support us through your sharing and listening to these extra-long episodes. You can find links to other amazing shows in this week's description. We'll be back in 1 week for part 3 of our review of this epic Ron Howard fantasy film. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.